This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Bullish on bullion.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open. A look at the broader economy as trading gets started for the day. We're 20 minutes in, so let's ask that question, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P down about a quarter of a percent. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow down about a third of a percent right now. Markets are lower in Europe. And in Asia, the Hang Seng was up by more than 2%. The Nikkei in Japan, about a percent today. Michelle Girard is senior economist at RBS. She joins us live this morning from Stamford, Connecticut. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, good morning.
Let's talk about the price of gold. Above $1,000 an ounce and breaking records these days seems to be indicative of inflation. Now, the value of the dollar, Michelle, keeps heading south. Should the markets be more concerned about inflation and the dollar right now?
Well, clearly, that's what's coming through in the marketplace. They look at the Fed, who has pumped all of these dollars into the system to stimulate the economy. And what you're seeing is it's putting downward pressure on the dollar and boosting gold because people are worried about inflation down the road. I think the most important thing is that this is not a concern for today. Markets are forward-looking, and you see people beginning to bet on higher inflation. But in terms of the Federal Reserve actually beginning to raise interest rates, which would undermine the recovery, which is still very fragile, I just don't think that that's in the cards. I don't think we're going to see the Fed doing anything with respect to interest rates until at the middle of next year at the earliest.
All right. Hang on a second, Michelle, because I want to bring in Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale with us live this morning. Hi, John.
Hi, Steve.
You have news that commercial real estate vacancies are up. What are the stats there?
That's right. The third quarter of this year, rents fell 8.5% from the previous year. They also show that companies vacated nearly 20 million square feet of office space in the third quarter. So there's this huge glut of empty offices.
All right. So this is good for those looking for office space. They can negotiate a little bit, right? But there are some concerns by the Federal Reserve, too. What's the worry here?
That's right. Well, remember, this industry is already reeling from tight credit and the overbuilding of supply. So this falling income from rent is going to hurt. And the Fed is preparing for a second shock to the real estate system after the residential housing bubble burst. This time it'll be commercial office space companies that'll be defaulting on their loans and falling into foreclosure.
All right. Michelle, overall, what does it mean for the commercial real estate industry, do you think?
Well, the commercial real estate sector is going to lag the residential housing sector, so it won't recover until the end of 2009. But the important point here is that in terms of the banking system, it does not present the kind of systemic risk that the residential housing downturn did.
So this isn't the other shoe, right?
It's a much smaller shoe, which will have much smaller fallout in terms of the broader economy.
What about this report, Michelle, about mortgage applications? The Mortgage Bankers Association said today apps were up 16% last week, the highest level since May. Is this the beginning of a trend, do you think?
We've seen some life in the housing sector, in part because of the first-time home buyer tax credit, and also with interest rates beginning to move up, people are beginning to try to refinance where they can. So we're seeing some life in the housing sector, but I think it's more of a bottoming out than the start of a big upward trend.
All right. Michelle Girard from RBS joining us from Connecticut. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale. Many thanks to you, too.
You're welcome, Steve.
All right. Earnings season begins today. Wholesale club Costco said this morning it made a small profit in its fiscal fourth quarter. And your flame-broiled Whopper is about to come with matching ambiance. Burger King is set to announce today a makeover of its 12,000 locations. The new look is ultra-modern with corrugated metal and brick walls and red flame chandeliers. listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, October 7th, 2009, at marketplace.org. The British hedge fund industry has gained a surprising new ally. The Church of England says it's fighting the good fight against new financial regulations. Our man in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard, reports.
Talk about a conversion. Only a year ago, the Church of England was the scourge of the finance industry. The Archbishop of Canterbury called on bankers to repent their sins. But now the church is rushing to the industry's aid, attacking European Union plans to crack down on hedge funds. It says the new rules would make it harder to generate the cash to carry out the church's charitable mission. Andrew Hilton runs the CSFI think tank. He's not that surprised the church has changed its tune.
The Church of England has an endowment about the same size as a mid-level Ivy League university, and it saw that endowment shrink by over 20% in the last year. That's enough to focus the minds of even the most religious people.
The church objects to, among other things, the plan to limit hedge funds' use of leverage because it could reduce returns. The hedge funds say amen to that. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, the St. Louis Cardinals make their way into the playoffs, playing the Dodgers tonight here in Los Angeles. The city's football team is also in the news. Word is talk radio's Rush Limbaugh wants to be one of the St. Louis team's new owners. Adam Allington has more.
Adding an owner as controversial as Rush Limbaugh could throw a whole new factor into the Rams' business model. A native Missourian, Limbaugh has a history with professional football. In 2003, he was briefly employed as a color commentator for ESPN's NFL pregame show. He left after a dust-up over comments he made that the media overrated Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb because he was black. Jim Thomas covers the Rams for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He says it's statements like that which could prove costly should he become part owner.
You just wonder if you're a African-American free agent, say, of some renown, and your choice is between the Rams and Seattle or whoever, would that factor in, knowing if you knew about Limbaugh's comments about McNabb?
Limbaugh is just one name in a group of investors teaming up to purchase the Rams. If the sale goes through, he may not be the controlling owner. One thing's for sure, even the host of America's most popular radio show will have to dig deep to walk away with the team. Despite its losing record, Forbes recently valued the Rams at $900 million. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Google's announced a deal to match up its web-based energy monitoring system with a so-called smart meter. That's going to track electricity usage down to the minute. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
So here's my electric bill, and wow, is it high. Problem is, all it says is how much power I used last month total. No detail about what hogged the most energy. But if I log on to Google's free power meter program and plunk down $200 for the Energy Detective Smart Meter,
that will allow you to actually see, as you turn things on and off in real time, what your usage pattern for the day has been.
Tom Sly is with Google.org, Google's nonprofit arm. He says these tools can isolate a single appliance's footprint.
To know that your cable box is using 20 watts constantly, or your dishwasher is really, really inefficient.
Google figured out how to visualize the internet, so perhaps they can help people map and visualize how they use electricity.
Energy consultant Ron Pernick says Google has the right credentials to move into the energy monitoring market, but
Google's not alone. There are a handful of companies and new ones emerging every day that are looking to get into this sector,
including major software companies and big utilities developing their own smart meter technology. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The worst-case scenario for a new climate treaty this December in Copenhagen is that the world won't strike one. But some U.S. energy players aren't waiting around. They're cooperating with the Chinese to reduce carbon emissions. Ashley Milne-Tight reports.
Albert Lin is with Future Fuels, a U.S. company that develops clean coal projects. The firm has just done a deal with China's largest utility, Huanong Power. Lin says Huanong is the world's biggest polluter, but it's also invested a lot of money lately in burning coal more efficiently and emitting less carbon.
And that's what started our relationship with them, in borrowing some of their advances in technologies, but also giving them some of our expertise in cleanup and handling of CO2 and other aspects.
Lin says some of Huanong's technology will also help Future Fuels with a power plant it's building in Pennsylvania. The aim is to burn coal more efficiently and stash half its carbon output underground when it starts up in 2012. Some experts say it's unclear how safe or realistic it is to bury emissions, but others say we've got to try. Coal is still a major source of power generation. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Next March, the U.S. Census Bureau will survey every household in the nation, more than 134 million of them. But the real trick will be getting folks to answer those survey questions. Latinos in the U.S., for example, tend not to participate. Elizabeth Threlkeld reports on one unconventional way the Census Bureau is getting the word out to them.
Fans of Telemundo's most popular Spanish soap opera, Más Sabe el Diablo, are used to intrigue, deception, and passion.
Voy hablando de lo decepcionado que estaba de mí.
But tonight's show sets a different tone. The Census Bureau and Telemundo are teaming up. Telemundo is having actress Michelle Vargas land a job as a census worker on the telenovela. Over the next few months, she'll go door-to-door on the show, teaching characters how to fill out census forms and answering their questions.
It's a wonderful way to get the message out because it's entertaining.
That's U.S. Census Director Bob Groves.
People associate with the characters in the telenovela, and the information being delivered is delivered in a way that many people find attractive and credible.
The latest census survey counted nearly 47 million Hispanics in the U.S., but Latino groups say the real number is much higher. Since census figures are used to channel hundreds of billions in government funding to schools, healthcare providers, and community programs, the Latino community often misses out. Vargas says one reason is some Latinos think answering census questions will reveal their illegal status.
They think that the government gonna show them who's have papers or not have papers. So I'm gonna show that it's easy, confidential, and very important.
And census data helps decide which households get Nielsen boxes to monitor TV ratings, says Telemundo president Don Brown.
It's a tremendous business issue, because if you're growing in Los Angeles, and Hispanics are growing in Los Angeles, there'll be more meters in Hispanic neighborhoods, there'll be higher ratings in Hispanic television.
Higher ratings mean more ad revenue for Telemundo, and that will catch the attention of people in the business community.
They're going to say, wow, look at this. There's almost a trillion dollar of purchasing power. It's going to be a real sea change in terms of the way Hispanics or Latinos are perceived as economic powerhouses.
That's a new plot twist. In Washington, I'm Elizabeth Threlkeld for Marketplace.
Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao ended a high-profile visit to North Korea today. He met with Kim Jong-il and signed a few trade deals. Now, there's money to be made for China in its relationship with the North. Marketplace Asia correspondent Scott Tong reports from the border city of Dandong.
Just about every morning, dozens of semi-trucks load up with goods going across the Yalu River into North Korea. Chinese truck driver Yuan Keyo.
We carry sheets of steel, pipes, everyday household items, and food like flour and fruit. They don't have any apples there.
China provides some 80% of North Korea's consumer goods, items not banned under UN sanctions. But in a nearby warehouse, one item looks awfully out of place, a treadmill. North Korea's emerging consumer class wants to stay trim, as well as gab and cell phones and gamble in casinos. Word is there's even decent pepperoni pizza in Pyongyang. Selig Harrison at the Center for International Policy in Washington has gone in 11 times.
We have the impression of North Korea as a starving place, but actually the place is economically very much alive as far as the cities and big towns are concerned.
That may be why single malt scotch sells well at the duty-free shop on the border. Chinese saleswoman Wang Yiling shows off a leather wallet, handy for North Korean traders with thick wads of cash.
And here this bag is Benetton, from Italy. They also like Dunhill. It's world famous. Don't even try to give them knockoffs. They know when the logo is fake.
As luxury goods move into North Korea, so does Chinese investment in mines to extract iron ore and factories to take advantage of super low labor costs. Exporter Yu Yang says opportunities abound, but doing business with North Koreans can be rough.
Their country is also very corrupt, worse than China. Sometimes we send things over by rail, but they don't send the empty rail cars back.
Two things you don't hear much about in this city, UN sanctions and nuclear bombs. For all the drama over missile testing, traders say here, commerce is king. Last year, China's trade with North Korea hit a record $2.8 billion, even as the rest of the world was isolating Pyongyang. In Dandong, northeastern China, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, the sheriff's office in Charlotte County, Florida, is going to sell advertisements on its video monitor system for jail visitors. The money will go toward an inmate welfare fund. The sheriff says he'll sell the on-screen time to anyone who wants to reach out to a jailhouse audience, mainly lawyers. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.